All right, folks, welcome back to Build It, the non-league US soccer podcast, where we talk to non-league US soccer people, movers and shakers across the board, and other people. Joining me as ever, John Hall. Hello, John.
Hey, buddy. I like that you said movers and shakers and other people, and we are the other people, in fact, most of
Well, yes, increasingly so. Yeah, there's people doing it far better than we, but we're the only ones with the balls to take it to the podcast medium, aren't we? Joining us from deepest, darkest Texas, Michael Hitchcock. Hello, Hitch.
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
We're very well. Thank you so much for fitting this into your crazy schedule. We wanted to get you on because there's a number of things we want to talk about. Obviously, those who are paying attention, there's a store being set up. Those who aren't paying attention, there's a store being set up. But also, there's a whole history of US soccer stuff that we're going to try and cram into 40 minutes or so. I guess, well, to jump straight in, 20 plus years of MLS from wide, copious amounts of research. How was that? How did that progression take you?
Yeah, so I was fortunate enough to get a job in Major League Soccer when the league began back in those early humble, you know, building years, which was a lot of fun. You wore a lot of hats. You know, now, you know, Major League Soccer organizations are a little bit more like NFL operations and, you know, have the staff to support that. Back in the day, man, you did it all, right? And so, and I love that, right? That's me. I'm just love learning every part of the business. Started in entry-level commission-only ticket sales for DC United up in Washington, D.C., just as a way to get my foot in the door. But had ambitions to, you know, to help the league grow. And, you know, I just honestly always felt that if you can, you know, work in your passion, you don't work a day in your life. And so I always loved soccer, sort of the beginning of the soccer bubble in this country. And like I said, lucky to get a job early on in MLS and ended up having a pretty decent management career that took me all over the country. And what brought me to Dallas is Lamar Hunt, one of the great sports pioneers, hired me to be the general manager of FC Dallas. And we opened one of the first soccer stadiums in the country at the time called Pizza Hut Park in a little town called Frisco, Texas, 32 miles north of downtown Dallas, that had more cows than people when we moved there 18 years ago. And I was the general manager and ran the business operation, the team, launched one of the first youth academies. We opened a 17-field soccer complex, but really built this hub for soccer in North Texas. And really in some cases for people around the country to be able to come play on those beautiful fields out at Pizza Hut Park, and ended up having a lot of success with that. And then 14 years ago, actually left and started my own company. I still own that company today called Playbook Management International. Just working soccer, knowing, you know, soccer was about to hit this massive growth stage in the U.S., which we've seen, you know, even though there was a pesky pandemic that slowed it down for a short period of time. But knew the game was growing, wanted to do more than just be a manager or work for someone else, wanted to own my own teams. I'm not independently wealthy. I'm an Army brat. So, you know, I've got a good work ethic. I've got good core values. And, you know, so it's this and this that was going to help me become an owner of sports teams. But also, you know, I know who I am. I know what I'm good at. And that's really the grassroots community-based, you know, part of what made Major League Soccer so great in the early years. And so I wanted to be able to do that. And the best way to do that for me was to work in, pick your choice of nomenclature, non-league, minor league, lower division, but this area of grassroots community-based football in the U.S. that I knew markets like Lubbock, Texas, Boone, North Carolina, and Annapolis, Maryland, someday would be able to support a team at a very high level. And so we run them like almost like MLS JV teams. They all have their own dedicated staff with GM, sales and marketing. We invest a lot into the communities, and like any investment, it's a risk, and you hope you see a return on that risk, and the market responds to, you know, that outreach. But yeah, so I've been doing this for 28 years now, and I literally work 6-7 days a week, 12 hours a day. But I'll get back to what I mentioned earlier. I haven't worked in an hour, you know.
I hear you. We're kind of the same, but without the financial backing. We're putting the same hours in without getting the financial rewards back. Is it a case, I'm being very flippant here, but is it a case of just boredom that maybe drives you from one locale to the next? Or like, have you set it up and you know that it's good to go and fly my child be free, I need to go and do it again?
Yeah, so our first team we invested in actually was a team in England. That is a non-league team. They play in the National League North, a club called Alfreton Town.
Don't get me started on this, son. This is a whole other conversation that no one wants to hear about.
But, but before it became cool and sexy for Hollywood celebrities to invest in, lower division football clubs, I was doing that many, many years ago. And that team's actually in the second round proper FA Cup, and game will be broadcast, which will be pretty cool. We found that out late last week. So that was our first investment, and that was really just to really get in and learn about what football means to communities like Alfreton, and looked at many clubs there. That was the one we decided to invest in. I really enjoyed it. It's been an amazing investment. Love every second of it. But then took some of those best practices of how you can really build something that is a tradition, right? It's just, it truly is woven into the fabric of that community, and take that and apply it to the U.S. And so in the U.S., you know, we've identified this little niche area that we're really good at, that I can afford it to invest in. Once again, I'm not in that billionaire boys club, so I can't invest in Major League Soccer or Premier League level teams, but I could build something really special that means just as much to someone in Annapolis or Boone or Lubbock, Texas. And so that's what we do. We invest where we identify really interesting opportunities. Usually it's a community that means something to me, so there's a personal connection. You know, we're you know, people call it crazy until it works, then they call it visionary, right? So, you know, so we're a little bit crazy, and, you know, putting a team in Lubbock, Texas, you know, people said, what are you doing? You're mad, man. Well, that team averages 5,000 fans a game and has helped grow the sport of soccer in an underserved community. And my connection to that community is my daughter went to Texas Tech University and graduated from the School of Sports Management there, and, you know, had an opportunity to launch a team with my daughter, which is one of the coolest things I've ever done in my life, right? And to see her grow and develop and prosper as a young professional has been really cool and in a neat community. Boone, North Carolina, team was launched because App State cut men's soccer due to COVID-19 and literally was sitting in a pool drinking one too many Modelo Especials in Dallas, Texas. And, you know, nothing's going on in the world. It's 2020, sports world shut down. My son was recruited to play soccer at App State, so I had him on my Twitter account, and I saw a tweet that, you know, App State men's soccer announces they're shutting down due to, you know, COVID-19. And I thought, well, that's sort of shitty. You know what I mean? Like, that could have been my son that's there. And so, once again, I had nothing going on in my world because sports world is shut down due to the pandemic. So I pick up the phone, I call the league, it's based out of New York City, and say, hey, who owns the rights to Boone, North Carolina? They said, where? I said, perfect, send me the invoice. I bought the rights to a team in Boone, North Carolina, which is this team right here. And now I have purpose during the pandemic and literally did everything. I was doing every social media tweet, you know, Facebook post. So it was me running it in the short term with a great group of local partners and a great co-founder who was the former coach of App State Med Soccer. But we built this whole Bigfoot brand that, you know, really connected with people all over the country, and we were able to bring men's soccer back to, you know, a great stadium, which is App State Soccer Stadium. And that team, even though, you know, that community, Boone, has 19,000 people, the surrounding sort of, you know, mountain communities, 30,000 people total, it averages over 2,000 fans a game. And on game day, if you went there, you go to the brewery, you drink some great Squatchy Ale, which is our co-branded beer, and the supporters all march down the hill with the path we cut through the woods from the mountaintop brewery to the stadium, which is at the valley there. And you close your eyes, man, and you listen to the sounds and the smells and the chants. You would think you're at an international soccer match like you would be in England. You're just a lower division match. So we're super passionate about the game. We love what the game can mean to communities. And I'm just crazy enough to keep investing in these things, right? So we're not done yet. You know, we're gonna build the portfolio as big as we can. And each time you do it, you create more synergies. So, you know, we have a global sponsorship with Puma. They'll sponsor every one of our teams, because we sell lots of Puma gear for all of their teams. So, you know, you start to build up that sort of network and great staff and great people around it. Each team becomes more successful than the previous one.
And it's a loaded term, franchise, especially with the MLS thing. It doesn't feel franchisey, but the fact that you're jumping from project to project, but moving from project to project, right? Is there a template? Is there like a playbook that you can follow, that you do follow without, you know, giving away trade secrets?
Sure. Yeah, so what we've done is we've built, I think, a really interesting business model that allows us to, you know, because the big challenge with lower division soccer is you don't have big broadcast revenue, you don't usually have big multi-year sponsorship deals, you're grinding for every t-shirt to sell, every ticket, some years are better than others, right? So it's almost becomes a year-to-year business, and that's why most people own one, if they even own any, right? And you know, I've got, you know, now 8 NPSL teams and investments in 15 teams total, all over the world at different levels. And what we've done is we've built this really interesting sort of model underneath it, where we've got a company I launched called Virtual Vice President. And what that allowed me to do, it's a shared resource model, go out and hire vice president level talent. And we share that talent across all of our teams. So every team has a local GM, every team has a local sales and marketing executive, every team has a local community relations and outreach manager, every team has their own coaching staff, obviously their own players, has their own army of interns, which we rely heavily on in this, you know, type of level of football. And so all the stuff that can be done virtually, we do with vice president level talent. So global sponsorship deals, a lot of the marketing, you know, production is all done from our marketing and design agency and team. You know, even, you know, like in Boone, North Carolina, you know, the first year, everything was done out of Dallas, Texas, literally everything, because we were coming out of a pandemic. And if we tried to create this really strong staff in Boone, we would have gone out of business, right? say we evolved and grew, and now they have their own staff. They have a team shop, you know, that's open, you know, 5 days a week, and you just build something. And so we build an interesting little infrastructure around our teams. And but that only comes with scale, right? You got to have enough teams to be able to do it. But they're not franchises. And the reason that we like the NPSL is the NPSL is a 501c6 nonprofit, the league itself. It is member-driven, meaning each member, which is an owner, has a vote. We have a say. We help provide the direction. We help approve the operating budget. You know, we're a part of the process. And you're not buying a franchise where it's a private company that's making money on you taking the risk locally. You're buying a membership in a nonprofit. I like that model, right? And it also sort of feeds into my entrepreneurial nature, right? I'm not the kind of guy who would buy a McDonald's. I'd create, you know, Hitch's Burger Shack and take a chance on, you know, something that's unique and different and fun and local. So each one of these teams, we do have a playbook. There are best practices. There are shared resources, which help them run at a higher level. All of our websites are managed by one person, you know, so all the things that can be done virtually are done, but they all have their own dedicated local staff, their own social media content person, their own GM, their own sales and marketing person, their own community outreach person. We even like interns. We intern management is through Virtual Leap by company. And so they allow us to do continuing education with all the interns and really provide a real meaningful experience for them, which helps you get better interns and helps you make sure they have a wonderful experience. So at the end of the day, you know, we've been able to, I think, build a really unique model that if we just owned one team, wouldn't be the case. We'd be scratching and clawing. But now we got, you know, 3-year sponsorship deals with massive companies that give you more resources. And you know what we do with them? We invest them in the community. So at the end of the day, you know, my philosophy is it's community first, you know, but you got to have the resources to be able to do it. I'm not independently wealthy. I'm not willing to lose $1 million a year doing this thing. I'm willing to lose money to build something, but we got to be building year over year. And so that's where also the portfolio makes sense, right? Annapolis Blues average 8,000 fans a game. Well, they're making a little bit of money, right? Some of our teams that might be struggling a little bit, they might get pulled up by that because there's some shared resources there. So yeah, we built a pretty unique model. The communities we're in, you know, once again, we bring in local partners. So that's really important to me. So the guys that own the local brewery, the local coffee shops, the guys that own the cool, you know, local bars that show the Premier League games on the weekend, get soccer culture, understand their community. They come in as minority partners as part of this. So it does have that local sort of piece and that local flair. So it's not just some, you know, cowboy in Dallas that owns all these teams. You know, yeah, we're the managing partner, we're the majority owner, but it is hyper local and everyone's different and unique. And everything from the brand is always local, relevant. In a lot of cases, you know, voted on by the fans. The fans select what the brand and badge is going to be. But yeah, they're all about local, man, and just push that support local message.
It's fantastic to hear. I'm not apologizing for using the word franchise. It's just the easiest way to
understood.
Yeah.
Understood.
Hitch, strap in. John likes a question, but it takes a long time to get there. So
I'll be quick.
If you need to go make a cup of coffee or something, put it on loudspeaker and he'll be there. John, the floor is yours.
I'll be real quick. When you go identify that local GM, that local social media marketing person, where do you first like, hey, we want to start a club here. We need to find 3 or 4 key local staff. How do you go find those people?
Yeah, so fortunately, we've got a big network of contacts, just having been in the business for so long. And, you know, soccer is, like most businesses like this, is it's a niche business, so you know everyone, right? You're 1 degree of separation from being able to get to anyone. And I've always taken a lot of pride in being a good dude, right? So first and foremost, I'm a good dude. And so, you know, whether people think I'm a good businessman, bad businessman, I'm going to be a good person. And so I think people appreciate that and want to work in a culture of, you know, our philosophy is simply good people, good playing, good execution. Good people is what it's all about. And so whether they come from our immediate network or they've come through our intern program, so we're developing our own talent, not just on the field, but also off the field. Now, we don't have spaces for all these wonderful interns that come through our programs every year, but, you know, we'll have over 100 interns that intern for our teams throughout every season. And out of that, there's 5 good ones, right? So, you know, that we think we can take, and they love the culture. They love, you know, selling, you know, minor league soccer in this country, love the community outreach piece, the grassroots. Good fit, man, we hire from within. So a lot of it comes internal through network or through within. And ideally, you want someone local to be that face, that general manager. And often, well, like I mentioned, when you bring in those local partners, those owners of the brewery, the coffee shop, you know, the cool local boutique, you know, business owner, that they love that community. They love the sport of soccer. They have the network of local contacts who this could be a perfect fit for to be that true leader. So it's sort of a combination of where we recruit from on how we make that happen. But it's there certainly is a method to the madness for sure.
So I think that's really interesting. So you bring in minority owners that are local, right? You said
that's correct. Yeah.
I think that's a really unique way of saying, I don't just want your money this year, next year. I think that's a really unique way to offer them something tangible, some tangible equity in what they're building, so that it's the sky's the limit, right? We all can dream. So I guess I'm just real nerdy on this stuff. Like, what's the business setup then? Are they each separate LLCs, or how do you do that?
Yeah. Awesome question. So I've got lots of companies, too many, frankly, you know, where when it comes tax season, it's, my wife will tell you, it's probably the worst month of all of our lives. But anyway, so I've got a lot of it. They're all LLC S Corp. So, you know, that to answer the question of how they're structured. So in Boone, North Carolina, it's Appalachian Soccer Group, LLC, DBA, Appalachian FC. Our team in Lubbock is Lubbock Matadors Soccer Club, LLC. So our company is the majority owner and the major shareholder, the managing partner. So we're responsible for running. We're responsible for the P&L. My partners that are investing in this are investing in me. If we don't make it work, I'm the capital call guy, right? So that's where I say, be a part of it. Everyone's got a role. Let's make this something pretty special for the community. I know how to run and operate these teams, but if we happen to have an off year, and by the way, that can happen, and especially with the pandemic and coming out of it, that's on me. You know what I mean? So they have no capital calls, but they invest, but they also bring their companies in as sponsors, more importantly, as strategic partners. So, you know, the coffee shop in Annapolis, we have our own branded Annapolis Blues coffee. So when you go buy coffee at the most popular coffee, and he's got 14 locations in Annapolis and surrounding communities, you're drinking Blues coffee, the coffee of the team co-branded. That's pretty cool, right? You got a Forward Brewing. It's our beer that's the beer that's promoted the most in season, and it's in the cans, in the grocery stores, in the 7-Eleven. So those are things that are best practices that we take to all the markets, and we find the best local brewery, the coffee shop owner, the cool local owner of the businesses that really drive the community, that are the heartbeat of the community, and they come in as investors, not just sponsors. So we do have sponsors that aren't investors as well. But yeah, we bring in that core group. It also allows, me from, Dallas, Texas to, if the mayor needs to meet, I've got a partner that can go meet with the mayor. They also have a network of contacts they can bring, whether it's hiring the general manager or, hey, we need a vendor to help us locally produce t-shirts, right? So they're having, vested local partners is way stronger than having, just sponsors.
Makes a lot of sense. Is it, have you run into challenges in any of your projects where no matter what, you're still the out of town guy coming in and saying, hey, I know, even if you're saying, hey, I'll take the financial risk, but please join. Like, is there other than you're a good dude? And I assume you do pretty well when you're able to sit down with people and have a conversation, but is it hard to just, seems like getting the kickstart there to unleash that. I could see people being hesitant to trust some out of town guy coming in with this promise of this cool thing.
Yeah. So the cool thing is we've got a track record now. So we've got history, right? So the first team I did, I didn't bring in any local partners, but it was in Fort Worth, Texas. So the first American team. So I could drive down there. Now that drive was an hour then. Fast forward 10 years, it's an hour and a half to get down there now, because I think a million Californians moved to Dallas, Fort Worth, but it's which is great and bad, by the way, let me tell you that. So, and I have a team in California, so I love Californians and moved here from LA. So I moved here as well. Anyways,
you're really, really, really backpedaling on that comment.
Well, I realized we might be doing more business in California, so we don't need anyone, bringing that up. So,
got it.
Love Californians. Yeah, love them. Anyways, so that first market, I did it myself, right? And brought in some partners, but they were just friends of mine that wanted to be a part of it, thought, I'll take a little money out of the stock market. This is a fun way to invest. And I believe in the growth of soccer. And that was early years. Now, when we sit down, it's almost I don't want to say easy. Nothing's easy in this world. But if you identify the right market, you've got the right right storytelling, meaning here's what we're going to build, right? Here's what it means. Here's how we're going to develop the brand. Here's the opportunity for local players, the opportunity for local aspiring sports management executives. And by the way, here's what we've done 7 other times. And pick up the phone and the mayor of Lubbock, Texas called the mayor of Fort Worth and said, hey, tell me about this Hitchcock guy, and got a ringing endorsement. And guess what? Now the mayor of Lubbock becomes season C holder number one, right? So, there's a lot of, built-in carbon credits, as they would say, and having done this many times over. And so now it's, the finding those strategic partners to come in is actually the easiest of the whole thing. It just is, but we don't take shortcuts. We don't take that for granted. We also, believe that, look, we're going to invest in the community before we expect the community to give back. So I call it, you know, boomerang marketing, right? You throw the boomerang out there and it goes out there for a while. And every time it's going, you're spending money. And it comes back and hopefully it looks bigger than it did when it left. And what we have found is when you do those things the right way and connect with the community and it's real and it's authentic, people respond to that and want to support that. I also think, you know, in a weird way coming out of the pandemic, it became a great time to do what we're doing, which is this lower division community-based soccer, because there was so much pent-up demand to be with your community, right? To be with friends and loved ones and to be out. And so in a weird, weird way, man, coming out of the pandemic, it was like, you know, going into it was way harder than coming out of it. Now, getting sponsors to come back online and, you know, unfortunately, a lot of businesses went out of business, small businesses, which is a lot of our sponsors. So I'm not discounting that there was a terrible impact and obviously everything we know about the pandemic. But in our world, the fan base became more they just embraced this so much greater, you know, in 2021, 2022, 2023.
Do you dream of longer seasons? Do you dream of like taking your success of these clubs with thousands of fans and going, well, we can do it for 5 or 6 or 7 home games. I wonder if we tacked on 6 more weeks of the season. What are your thoughts on some of that?
Yeah, so I think one of the biggest challenges we have when we have success is managing expectations, right? So just because you can sell 8,000 fans a game at Navy Marine Corps Memorial Stadium after lacrosse and baseball's ended and before football begins, when you start competing with those other sports and school and, you know, and weather and, you know, all those other things, it's not the same. It's a different ball game, right? And so I understand that and appreciate that. Now, that said, I do think the market will tell you where you need to go, right? It'll tell you what that water level is to be sustainable. And I think some of the biggest mistakes people make, whether it's by ego or they make that mistake of, shoot, we're getting 3,500 fans a game. Let's go do this 18 times a year. But now we're flying across the country for half of those games. Like your business model changes, you change. And with that, sometimes your core values have to be compromised a little. Like right now it's, you know, we're about to enter the biggest growth stage in the history of American soccer. And we're going to see massive growth at all levels, right? And then I think we're going to see strategic contraction, which I think the U.S. soccer pyramid will be stronger. I do believe that. But what it looks like is going to be very different. And so we also don't want to be premature in saying, hey, let's go to this league and pay $1 million to join a league for the privilege of playing in another league. But now we've changed, right? Right now, and I do believe, almost like college football, I think a lot of our fans like the fact they only have to pay attention to 8 home games, right? And every home game is an event, and you can do Ted Lasso night on one night, and you can do Dog in the Park night, and, you know, youth soccer, like, you can do all those things, but you don't need to fill it in calendar of 28 of them, right? I mean, it's like the challenge baseball has, and I mean, you look around Major League Soccer, there are parts of their season when they're competing with other sports that, unless you're one of the truly just knock it out of the park, killing it teams, they struggle with attendance. They do, you know? And so we've got sort of our niche. We're just going to work the niche, and we tell our staff, don't get distracted by the talk of, hey, you should be playing in, you know, USL 1 or you should be playing in MLS Next Pro. And we'll always have those conversations. You just have to and know what's going on. But we got our niche. We tell our staff, do the job better tomorrow than you did today. That's all we got to worry about, right? Eventually, if we're meant to be a year-long, you know, professional team, or if that's something that gets created by NPSL or another league, yeah, we'll explore it. But right now, let's just do this really, really well and provide a great impact on our community. Sponsors are happy. Fans are happy. Ice cold beer in their hand that's co-branded with our team and the best local brewery. Make the gear sexy and good looking. You know, and just, you know, the product on the field, I always tell people is, you know, in Annapolis, Maryland, you could build a team that's got 5 guys from Maryland, University of Maryland, 5 from Georgetown, 5 from UVA, 5 from VCU, 5 from UM, you know, BC. That team is as good as any USL championship team. They just are. Right. And some of those guys are going to go to MLS. Some will go international. Some will go USL. Some won't make it. But my point is that product on the field for 99% of American soccer supporters, it's an entertaining product. And instead of paying $40 a ticket to go see DC United, and I love DC United and they're great supporters and friends of ours, it's $15 to go see a game, you know, $10 if you're a kid. And you can come tailgate for 3 hours before and it becomes a whole event. And that t-shirt, you know, it's not $35, it's $20. Right. So we just know where we are, and we just try to do it really, really well. And I think the community appreciates that. They really do.
I agree with you. I think that's one of the things I struggle with, too. I guess the reason I struggle with it is I see sort of just the smiling faces at our games, and I think, man, I wish we could repeat it more. But I'm the same as you were. Till schooled out, okay, mid-May, late May for the kids. And then club season goes till the middle of June. And baseball goes to the middle of June. And then, by the way, Mother's Day in May, Father's Day in June, Memorial Day weekend. And then you have like a six-week run from June 20th. Skip the 4th of July. You have a five-week run till the end of August. And then it's, hey, school starting soon. Like, there's 5 weeks of uninterrupted entertainment time.
Yep.
And damn, do we try to push hard in 5 weeks. And it's absolutely miserable as a day-to-day operator of a club to work your ass off all year long and hope for the sweet spot of 5 weeks. You know, you do fine in May and a little bit early June, whatever. It's just like, it just wears on you. And so that's when I go, boy, it'd be nice if we played about a six-month season, not every week, but maybe we played 3 games a month. Like, just, so it's still, you have like the artificial scarcity, but yet you have a little more breathing room. We're trying to mash together a men's team, a women's team, men's reserve schedule, all in a 3 month period. And the staff is, ask Nick, overworked, underpaid at $0. It's just hard on everybody, right? But the community impact piece, I think, is what makes it worthwhile. What do you guys do then in your 9 month off season in each of your markets? There's a playbook for starting a club, but there's a playbook for off season content. And I assume you throw the boomerang again every August.
Great question. And what we realized is, well, I think in our business, at our level, respective level, you have to decide, are we a 12-month a year operation or are we a 6 month a year operation, right? We choose 12-month because we're just trying to build these to have the greatest community impact they can. And eventually that means it'll have the greatest value, right, over time, as a business entity. And so what we have realized is we have year-round staff that are paid for all of our teams. And we're probably as active in the community, maybe more so off season than we are in season. So we create, you know, programs like, you know, kicking and reading programs where any of the local players will go to the libraries, they'll go speak to the, you know, read to the kids with their parents and then go out and play soccer with them, do a clinic. Most of our markets, we have a mascot. And in some of them, it's a, you know, $10,000 custom made mascot with an AC unit in it. So you don't die in Lubbock, Texas. But that mascot, then we sell a different kit sponsorship on the mascot. That mascot's out in the community 100 times a year. So they're at the Texas Tech football game where we'll sponsor a tailgate party. They're at the Texas Tech women's soccer game where we'll buy season seat holders all their tickets to come and tailgate and go to the game. And then they're out at every festival, every community event, you know, at the school, parent teacher, you know, organization, fundraisers. Like, we are, you know, just, you know, last weekend in Annapolis, they were at 3 events. So we sponsored the Bay, the Bridge. There's Cross the Bay Bridge, Walk Run, which is a big community event. Like 30,000 people were a sponsor of that. We're participating there, marketing, promoting. We were at a charitable ball, which we sponsored, and we were there with, you know, with our staff and supporting that. And then they were out, you know, at a community festival. And so I mean, it's just such an important part. For me, the social media, you got to be as active off season as you are in season. Hard to do. But to me, you got to make that commitment to doing it. Find ways to create some content, you know, that a lot of it's community-based during the offseason. And then just literally being out there doing the hand-to-hand combat job year-round, man. And that's what we had to do in MLS early days. We are on every sideline of every youth soccer field, just trying to get people to understand DC United is not the United Way DC chapter. It's actually a soccer team, right? And those are the humble beginnings I mentioned earlier on this podcast. So we take that approach with our teams. But that's a real investment, man. That's you got to be willing to take the risk. And fortunately, I think we've got the model that we're seeing. It can be sustainable. But, you know, every time we do it, man, we're rolling dice, right? There's no guarantees of anything. There's no crystal ball that, hey, we're going to do this in Columbus, Georgia now. We're going to get a return on our investment. But we believe in the model. We believe in the potential outcome, and we think it's worth the risk.
When you set your new franchise up, sorry, I'm just going to look. You look at the new club up, you've admitted that like you've got the history and you've got the cachet of your previous successes and everything else. What if I stripped all that away from you and said, Columbus, Georgia, because that's the new one, right? Columbus, Georgia.
It is. Yep.
Yeah. This is your first run at it. What knowledge are you bringing that isn't backed up by your name?
Wow, that's a loaded question right there. I would say, hire Hitch and his management company to come in and help set it up for me. No, I'm just kidding. So the beautiful thing about soccer at this level, and what I enjoy really about the NPSL is, you know, the NPSL, there's a spirit of entrepreneurship. There's a spirit of partnership. We don't have shared ownership in anything because it's a nonprofit, but we have shared membership, right? So we're all voting members. And so what you find is everyone helps each other out. Now, for 90 minutes, when you play each other, you want to kill each other, right? And that's just the nature of the game. But you're drinking beers together, and the supporters are drinking beers together before and after that 90-minute window. And so I think if I was starting a new club in Columbus, I would pick up that phone and call the five most successful teams in, you know, NPSL, if that's the league I was joining, which is what we joined, obviously. And they will share so much with you. They will share the playbook. They will share the best practices. They'll share the lessons learned, right? So that you don't necessarily have the same pitfalls that, you know, they've had to go through. And that's what we do, man. I swear, I've got, you know, 3 to 4 calls a day where I'm just talking to prospective owners of teams, whether they want to join USL, NPSL. I've just gotten the, you know, hey, talk to Hitch, right? Talk to Hitch. And I'll spend 30 minutes with anyone. And some of them later on say, man, I enjoyed talking with you so much. I want to hire your company. That's not the point of the call with them, but that's great, right? I mean, that's what we're in the business of doing. But others just, you can help guide them a little bit. And, you know, all these leagues are great, man. USL2 is doing amazing stuff. NPSL is doing great work. You know, UPSL is doing their thing. Like, you know, all the regional leagues are doing, you know, amazing God's work in their communities and areas. It's almost like if we could bring them all together, imagine what sort of lobbying group we could become, you know, with U.S. soccer and frankly, with any government agency out there, because the strength and power of what we are all doing, it's all have a massive community impact. And so, you know, so I think, you know, any counsel I would give someone is, one, understand that this is a small business. It is, whether you are a nonprofit or not. More revenue has to come in that goes out unless you have owners or donors that are willing to offset that. And if that model isn't the case, you're going to go out of business, right? And so I always tell people it is the small business of soccer. So it's the most fun you'll ever have. It's the hardest you'll ever work. But it's also, you know, one thing that can have probably the greatest impact on your community. And so, but understand going into it, eyes wide open, this thing's a job, man. And this is not, you know, you have some owners that I think see it as, you know, sort of a side hustle. They might have successful businesses over here, love soccer, love their community. And they get into it, they realize, well, this shit's hard. You know what I mean? I didn't realize. And that's where owners start to get what's called owner fatigue. And you start seeing, the number of teams that are in that, you know, that graveyard with tombstones of lower division, non-league, minor league, whatever you want to call it, teams that haven't made it in this country. It's 500 teams that have gone out of business. Some just did it for the wrong reasons. Others just get tired because it's a lot of hard work. And then some are just losing, their business model is wrong. They're just losing more money than the owner can sustain or the donors are willing to support. For me, it's just understand what you're walking into and engage that community. That's the most important thing. If the community's not behind you, don't waste your time or money.
John, I think we might as well just rebrand this podcast, John, as Boots on the Floor, right? Because there's no other. We keep on looking for like the golden bullet of like the short. No, we're not looking for it, but people want the shortcut, right? But there isn't one. It's just hard grasped. It's shaking hands. It's Boots on the Floor. Yeah, I feel like you two are cut from a very similar cloth. It's quite nice to see. John.
So I'm curious, Hitch, when you go into a community, what's your first outreach point of contact? Do you go right to city officials? Do you go to the bar? Do you go like where's the first phone call?
Yeah, so we do a ton of legwork before we even, you know, make a market a finalist, right? I mean, right now we're doing it with 3 markets for 2025, and whether they all make or none make, you know, you just don't know. So I mean, a lot of people, I think what people don't realize, I'll use Annapolis as an example because that one caught fire pretty quickly. You know, we averaged 8,000 fans our first season. Like, I mean, that's unheard of, like success at this level. People don't realize that before we kicked that first ball, we had been working on it for 2 years, right? 2 years. And the first 6 months, or what you're talking about, is going into market, meeting with the mayor, meeting with the city council leaders, meeting with the EDC president, you know, meeting with, you know, the whoever leads their chamber of commerce or business association, meeting with the different venues. So in the case of Annapolis, you know, the Naval Academy, and building those relationships, meeting with the soccer leaders, which is tricky in some cases because, you know, we understand this. Youth soccer is such a, you know, they're all fighting for their little chiefdom. You got to find, you know, good people, but then the word gets out, you know, that you met with someone and didn't meet with them. So soccer actually isn't in the first, you know, couple of rounds, but before we decide to launch a team, but we're far enough along in the process, we'll meet with the soccer community and, you know, see if, you know, you just want to see it. Do people want this, right? And then, you know, I call it the, you know, the pub sort of, you know, friends and family focus group. you just go into the pub, get a beer, and just start talking to people, you know, and you get their thoughts. And, you know, if a team like this could be successful in the market. And so definitely need to start with city leadership. And if nothing else, one, they'll tell you, hey, there's someone else working on this that's pretty far along. Well, we're out. Or, hey, we love this. We like you. We're getting behind this. Let me introduce you to the brewery owner. Let me introduce you to the coffee shop owner. So a lot of these markets, I don't have any context. It literally starts as a cold call to the mayor, right? And sometimes you don't even get to the mayor. You get to the chief of staff, and your second or third meeting in the market might be with the mayor, but you're meeting with, you know, the leader of, you know, whatever their sports council is. You know, you're just every step meeting with more people, and you just try to build that groundswell of support. But you definitely want to start with the key city leaders. It has been my experience. But also, you know, once again, they'll give you a lot of good information on the market, the concept, 6 months of work before it even makes a short list of finalists.
We had a similar timeline starting here in our own town, and it was the same. It was actually a year before we kicked the ball, about 6 months before we launched publicly. It was just friends and family, and talked about it and kind of conceptually what we wanted to do. And I don't just, it's not just me and my buddies want to play. So let's get a group of guys and go do it. What is your thoughts? None of your clubs have youth academies directly associated. Is that true? All just adult?
Yeah. So we've got relationships. So, you know, there might be an affiliate relationship with some youth. A number of clubs at this level start at the youth and they add this on top, you know, sort of the men's, you know, point to their own internal pyramid. We're sort of doing it the opposite. So these clubs might have youth, you know, whether it's acquiring a youth club and rebranding it, you know, because we feel we can collectively grow the game even more, launching a new youth club and just trying to build it, you know, from square one. So I think the youth is definitely in our future. Women's soccer is definitely in our future, but we want to perfect our swing to the best of our ability with our teams right now, get the brands established, don't get into a place where everyone feels we're competing with them from a youth standpoint. And some markets may never have youth, you know, we just might help support grow the game at the youth level. And we do a lot of that with our players going in and coaching the youth, you know, and doing clinics and, you know, skill development, doing a lot of coaching development in all of our markets. Cause you know, a lot of the rec soccer associations, you know, you've got a dad or mom who's coaching. It's not someone who's got a, you know, CB or A license, which maybe they're better than the CB and A license. But the point being, they've had no true formal education, right? When it comes to coaching, we take our coaching staff and create coaches programs and just try to help develop them. And, you know, I've always said, I think our Messi, you know, in America, or our Ronaldo, whichever you prefer, I don't think he's coming from Dallas, Texas. I think there's lots of great players coming from Dallas, Texas. I think that player's coming from Lubbock, Texas. And so we need clubs like ours that are investing in youth development. Because if you look at some of the greatest players in the world, they come from an island with, you know, 20,000 people, you know, but they have the infrastructure there to develop the talent. So I think the saying is, you know, talent is equally distributed, but opportunity is not. We want to try to balance that out and provide opportunity for whether you live in the high country in North Carolina. Shouldn't mean you don't have the same opportunity as someone in Charlotte, North Carolina, right? 2 hours away, but it's a world away when it comes to youth soccer development. So we try to use our teams, our brand, and also just being that sort of aspirational, you know, place where all these players want to move on to. And we've got amazing success stories of like in Lubbock, Texas, where their youth, just rec association has increased by thousands since we launched the Matadors. Now, coincidence, the sport is growing, you know, I don't know. But what I know is there's thousands more youth rec soccer players now in Lubbock, Texas than there was 3 years ago. And that's the amount of time that we've been there. So I think there is a direct correlation of put a high-level team that's professionally run and operated, that's out in the community, making meaningful connections. You know, our philosophy everywhere is make soccer cool and make soccer fun, right? And if you can do those two things, soccer's at a place that it's developed in sport, you will be successful.
Off the back of that, pick any one of your multitudinous clubs that you wish. At the end of next season, is it more important to have won a league championship or to have had a season full of full bleachers or to know that in 10 years' time your team would be all locals?
Yeah, so for me, I would say the most important is having thousands of fans packing that stadium. And the reason is it brings in revenue, not just ticket revenue, merchandise revenue. I mean, every person that walks in is worth $4 in buying t-shirts, hats on average per cap revenue. But it also then allows you to generate more sponsorship. So you have more revenue coming in, more media attention, and then you can capital reinvest that, which is what we do in the youth development, in the community outreach, in, you know, the player development, all of that. I think for me, knowing that we've had the impact that I think we can have is in Lubbock, Texas right now, 5 hours due west of Dallas, we have open tryouts. We bring in all the best players from West Texas. A couple guys might make the 30-man roster, but they're not ever going to see the field unless it's an exhibition match or, you know, they're not going to be a top 18, 20 player. We have to bring in 28 players from all over the world to live in Lubbock, Texas to play for the Matadors. 10 years from now, man, if every player was from Lubbock, then we've done our job, right? Then we've really had that impact. And the reality is it won't be every player, but, you know, hopefully you've got half your team that, you know, has been able to, you know, fall in love with the game at the age of 10 and met a player out at Lubbock Soccer Association's rec fields and been to games, been to a clinic, goes to our camp, you know, aspires to that level, keeps playing, works harder, you know, trains more, wants to be there, does some private training with some of our players. And when they're 20, they're on the roster, you know, playing for this team. So that's ultimately the goal of where we want to get to. But if we don't have the revenue coming in, we don't get there. You know, that's just the reality of the small business of soccer. You notice I didn't even talk about championships, right? We're all competitive beasts, right? And I'm 50 years old now, so I've been much better at managing my competitiveness than when I was younger. But we all want to win, man. There's no doubt about that. That helps drive business, interest, everything else. But, and the big but is there are plenty of teams that win a national championship at our level. They get 100 fans a game that I think would give up that national championship for 5,000 fans a game and being able to do other stuff, right? That's always my outlook on it. And, you know, these young men that come play for us, you know, we do our best to help develop them, not just as players, but as people. And I do believe this level of soccer plays a really important stepping stone, as it does all over the world. You know, I mean, my team in England, Alfreton Town, you know, Jordan Pickford played there. So if Jordan didn't play there and would have given up on football when he got cut by his Premier League Academy, and there are countless players like this, right, the stories, you know, he wouldn't have been in the World Cup representing his country, right? And, you know, the headlines in some of the papers, my partners there, you know, who sent me images of it, was from Alfreton Town to the world's biggest stage. You know, there was an article about, you know, Jordan Pickford. It's just, it plays a critical role, right? And it's on the way up, but it also has that trampoline effect for guys that just need that second opportunity. And so we need more of this. And I don't mean just good soccer on the field, good competition, but there's something about playing in front of 5,000 Lubbock Matadors fans that care about this team and those players, just like they were a Texas Tech football player. That kind of pressure not to disappoint your community, that's player development, right? Because when you get to the next level, you're playing in front of 20,000, 30,000, 40,000 fans. Great players can crumble if they haven't had that opportunity to don't go from 100 fans to 30,000, but go to 5,000, go to, you know, 6,000. It's just an important part of the player development. And so, once again, we take a lot of pride in not just trying to help them develop as players and reach their ultimate goal of being a higher level pro, also the person development. So we're teaching these, you know, young men how to go speak in public, right? How to, you know, go, you know, interface with fans and be engaging and, you know, be an ambassador for the sport, for the club, and for the community, and to be a positive role model. And so, you know, when we sign our players, we say, hey, there's three things. Yes, you're a great soccer player. We know you want to be a pro soccer player. That's why you're here. We appreciate that. But understand, just as important, you're a positive role model in the community. You're going to go do lots of appearances, sign lots of autographs, go do speaking gigs. Really, really important you embrace that. And the third is you're an ambassador for this community, for our team, for our sponsors, for our owners. And so when you travel down to, you know, Brownsville to play a game, you're representing Lubbock as a community, and you need to understand that, embrace that. Players that don't want to do the appearances, aren't willing to do that, we'll pass on them. You know, we just will. They just don't fit our culture and it won't work out. So we're very big on building culture. And, you know, that I think helps you get better results. And, you know, I think it's more than a coincidence. Last 3 years, one of my teams has had coach of the year in the NPSL because we hire coaches that fit that culture. This last year, we had national goalkeeper of the year, national player of the year. They're not the most talented goalkeeper in the league or player, but when the fans vote, they're voting for them because they've connected with that community, right? So we try to teach those valuable life lessons as well, because reality is such a small percentage are going to make it to professional soccer from our level. Two things. One, we want them to have the pro soccer experience with us so they can tell their grandkids, I played in front of, you know, it'll be like the old Fish stories, right? In front of 20,000 fans at Navy Marine Corps Memorial Stadium. Reality was it was 8,000 fans, but it's a packed stadium, great atmosphere. This is their pro experience, and we treat them like pros, even though they don't get paid to play the game. So that's one. And two is, if they do well, we're going to showcase them. We're going to market them. Just like the interns, we'll pick up the phone and call the director of sales at the Houston Astros and say, hey, I've got a young you know, potential rock star, interested in working in Major League Baseball. They intern for us, put their resume at the top, and we're helping people get jobs that way. With the players, same thing. We'll call the clubs and say, we've got someone you need to come take a look at. Open the door. We don't know what happens then, but we can help open those doors. So that's just who we are and what we're all about.
There's a difference between the best players and the best people, right? And I think we know which side of the fence you're on.
Give us the overview of the store and where that came from.
Yeah, so it's something I've always had sort of in the back of my head. Like, man, it would be cool to create a lifestyle soccer shop, right? And something that can promote lower division clubs, can create really, once again, going back to the adage of make soccer fun, make soccer cool, and putting it in a, you know, really desirable sort of entertainment and shopping district, you know. And it's just, you know, there was every reason not to do it. And, you know, it's expensive. It's massive risk. There's, you know, the timing's not right. Well, we're 3 years out from the World Cup. You know, we live in Dallas-Fort Worth area, which actually my wife and I live in a little area we just moved to called Historic McKinney. And it's got like 100 local boutique shops, brewery, 5 wineries, you know, 6 coffee shops all in like a 2-block radius built around the old 1800 courthouse. Really cool area. We can walk there from our house.
Are you sure you're not living in a Hallmark movie?
Well, that's what it looks like, and it's getting dressed for Hallmark movie season. Yeah, during Christmas, that's exactly what it's like. And so anyway, so we ended up getting this really cool space that we can walk to from our house for office, because we, you know, we all, you know, pandemic hit, we got rid of our office, went virtual. Now, once again, everyone wants to be back together, right? And you know, and so we were like, you know what, let's do office space. Let's make that happen. We launched a couple additional businesses that needed the space as well. And so we got a really cool space, got really lucky. It used to be a coffee shop, right? So it's got a cool vibe to it, and the building's 100 years old. And so anyway, so I was sitting here doing some work on a Saturday, because once again, we work every day. And Oktoberfest is outside our front door, where they blocked off every street. And there was actually a stage in front of our house, in front of our office. And I see one of the city council members walk by, and I go out and introduce myself to him. I've met, because we just moved to this area. And he goes, oh, you moved in here. What are you doing with it? I said, hey, well, it's a sports management company. Just using it for office space. I said, by the way, how many people are coming through for Oktoberfest? And so this is a month and a half ago or whatever it was. And he goes, oh, well, it's 70,000 people here. By the way, I swear half the people are wearing Bayern Munich jerseys and were with their kids wearing their soccer jerseys. And we know this is a soccer hotbed in this area. And we're in an open container district. So you can walk around drinking beer. So we can walk from our house to the office and drink beer if we wanted to, right? Really, really cool area. And so it's like 70,000 people. I'm like, light bulb, like back of my head, we came up here and went off. I'm like, I turned to my wife. I went back to the office. I said, let's open a soccer lifestyle shop. She's like, what? What on earth is that? I was like, we're not selling cleats. We're not selling, you know, we're going to get cool gear like this from teams all over the country. We'll sell it. We'll market it. Because I said, I think people want to support local. They want to support something that's cool. And we'll create other like fun Ted Lasso type, you know, fun gear, and, you know, for people who are just being introduced to soccer, right? And that's a lot of people walking around shopping in this area. So anyway, so I said, let's put up, you know, free TVs. We'll show Premier League games. We have couches. We have, you know, desks, and we have lots of cool gear. We're opening up on Thursday, actually. And so we're at the almost to the starting line, which has been pretty fun. And then every day just been working on this thing. So this last weekend, we were in here working, doing inventory, getting the tags and the scanner set up. And we just said, let's open the door. It's a beautiful day in McKinney. They were doing a wine walk where you can, yeah, and we're allowed to give out free alcohol because it's an open container area. So we have breweries that we do business with all over the country sending us beer. So you can drink cool craft beer, watch the Premier League game, do some shopping, and just hang out with other soccer fans. So that's sort of the concept, and hopefully buy something. And so anyways, we opened the door this weekend. We sold $1,100 in stuff. $1,100. We're not even open yet, right? I mean, it looked like a construction site. The people were, you know, we had a little path you could walk through, and we were giving out free wine and free beer, which we already had. So I was like, and just talking to people about it. I mean, our team in Charlotte, called the Charlottetown Hops, we sold over $200 worth of gear for Charlotte. We sold over $200 worth of gear for AppSC. Like, and people just think it's cool. They want to learn about it. We got pictures promoting all the teams. And so we call it Pro Rel Soccer Shop. Obviously, we all know promotion relegation. But it's about promoting lower division soccer, right? And celebrating the great history the game has in this country. A lot of people don't realize. And so, you know, people walked in and they would ask about this picture. I was like, oh, that's in Annapolis, where, you know, that's the game winning goal we scored in the 90th minute in the playoffs against Alexandria. They're like, well, that's a cool logo. Do you have any of that stuff? We sure do. And, you know, so it's creating a fun place for the soccer community to come together watch soccer. We got brilliant Wi-Fi. You can come work and watch, you know, Champions League if you want to during the week. Have a beer on us, you know, have a glass of wine, have a coffee. Can't sell it, but we can hand it out. Do some shopping, and we're taking 80% of the revenue of all the team sales and sending it back to the teams. So, you know, we're sending $160 today to Charlottetown Ops. That's $160 more than they had on Friday, right? So it's not life-changing numbers, but we're not open yet, man. We open on Thursday. We're doing a happy hour. We're going to watch the U.S. national team game in here on Thursday. But just something that was really fun. It's in a really cool location. The rent for the building was already paid for by my sports management company, so helps the business model of the shop. We're producing a lot of the gear in-house, you know, that we have the capability of doing. That helps lower our costs. But what's been cool is soccer clubs from all over the country are sending jerseys and sending T-shirts and hats and scarves. And it's been awesome already just in just opening the door for one day just to have the conversation. They want this, you know what I mean? And they love the local aspect. Yeah, they might support MLS. They all have a Premier League team, but you tell them the story about these lower division clubs and what they're doing for players and interns and the community, and 80% of the revenue goes back to Boone. They're like, yeah, I'll buy that sweatshirt. I'll buy that koozie. You know, they're buying stuff. So anyways, that's the concept. And hopefully a year from now, I'm not living under a bridge because I decided to launch a lifestyle soccer shop.
Go on, Jim.
No, I was thinking you got the pro of promoting all these clubs, but the relegation is the poor club that's now in the cemetery that the operator has 4,400 T-shirts in his basement. Might be a really nice way to recoup some of his money and get some of that money back for the unused Boneyard merch that otherwise is literally going to go in the garbage because the club folded and now they've been relegated right up there into the sky, you know, unfortunately.
Well said. Yeah, well said. But I'll tell you, man, it's been awesome just to see the response from the local community. Once again, one day litmus test, but just a lot of soccer fans, people just in Dallas for business had seen it on social media. We're going to go to McKinney with their friend to go get a beer anyways, you know, saw the door open, came in and bought some stuff. But it's like, you know, we have a whole like really cool scarf collection of, you know, teams are just sending one or two scarves. Well, they're sold out. Right. But, you know, I see your scarf collection behind you, John. It's like, you know, we have people coming in buying two scarves from clubs they didn't even know existed before they walked in. And now they're going to pay attention. They're going to go to the website. They're going to want to learn more about it. So it's going to be a lot of fun. It's been a heck of a lot of work since Oktoberfest to get it to the starting point. Wanted to have it open before, obviously, the big holiday, you know, shopping season. And you guys, I think, will appreciate this. We don't own the building. We're leasing it. We did the lease originally for 3 years. Our lease ends the day after the World Cup final in 2026. So we're going to know whether having this office space and now shop is a smart business decision or not right after the biggest sporting event in the history of the world right here, maybe even in Dallas.
How do clubs get stock to you?
Yeah, so far everyone's gone on social media. My Twitter X is at Hitch New Biz, and we have Pro Rel Shop as the Pro Rel Soccer Shop Twitter account handle. And people are just messaging us, and we're you know, letting them know, here's how it works. It's a consignment plan. You get 80% of the revenue. If you want the gear back for next season and we haven't sold it, we'll ship it back to you at our own expense. We can also produce gear for you. So we have a team in Louisiana that, ironically enough, needed some gear to be produced. And, you know, we produced it for the shop and sent them samples, and they approved it, and they bought some gear from it at, you know, a deep discount, and we're about to ship that off to them tomorrow. So, you know, we can produce some of the gear as well, just basic logo stuff, nothing too fancy. But yeah, I think we're going to sell a lot of gear to a lot of fans. We will have an e-commerce solution for fans that aren't in the Dallas area, and that's ProRelSoccerShop.com. The site is live, but the shop portion will go live tonight or tomorrow. We're just trying to get in all the inventory. Every day we keep getting more inventory from people. So at some point we'll have to, you know, hit the starter blocks and get going. And yeah, they can message us and we'll give them the information. And if they're interested, they can, you know, ship us the gear, which will obviously confirm the address.
I like John's idea of like the remaining stock of these long forgotten clubs. I like the idea of a corner of your store that is just like a graveyard, and this week's dead club is Aurora Borealis or whatever, right? And just when it's gone, it's genuinely gone. I didn't fully understand the concept. I do now, and I like it a lot. I wish you well with it. John.
No more questions. We've taken up enough of this time. I do appreciate the getting to meet you, at least on the computer. Really do appreciate it, and what you guys are doing in building clubs all over the place is really cool.
Oh, my pleasure. Really enjoyed it. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Hitch. Catch you around.
Sure that next time we'll have ourselves a laugh.